Phoenix City.
Hello and welcome to Phoenix City for another week. Dave and I are here.
Hello, hello.
Just Dave and I.
Yep. No one else is cool enough to hang out with us.
Well, Cam and Frosty are hanging out together on a holiday, which neither of us were invited to.
No, we were not.
We could have recorded on the holiday if we were invited. But anyway, we're here. We had minimal desire to record this week.
Yeah.
Mostly because the game was just really annoying.
Yep, that's pretty much right. I mean, the Fox commentary, we're trying to talk it up as a classic.
Nope.
That we rewatched again and again. I was like, no.
I'm never watching a second of that ever again.
I mean, unless we watch it on TW Go.
No, we're not doing that. But yeah, we're talking about the 4-3 loss to the Western Sydney Wanderers. Yep. Led the game multiple times through it. I think we went 1-0 up, 2-1 up, 3-2 up.
Sounds right to me.
And then thought we got the equaliser right at the end through Hamed, but for the VAR intervention on an offside, it remained 4-3.
Yep.
A loss.
Yes.
Very disappointing.
Well, it was frustrating in a range of ways because we finally scored some goals.
Yeah.
You know, and some players who we've been wanting to score goals scored some goals.
I mean, yeah.
Hamed got off the mark with a penalty,
yep.
But then he scored was a great goal.
Fantastic goal.
But it was, you know, ruled out. And I think it was also frustrating because it felt like there were probably two, maybe three big decisions in the game.
Yeah.
And they all went against us.
Yeah. I mean, let's start by talking about Wayno's goal.
Yeah.
Was it Wayne? Who was it? The first one. Scrappy Doo. What's his name?
Yeah, Devlin.
Devlin. Cammy Devlin. Yeah. That's it. Scrappy Doo. That's the only name I know him by, apparently. But phenomenal goal. Like, yeah. Absolute screamer.
Oh, and I think across the game, phenomenal goals. But yeah, his particularly good. It was kind of out of nowhere. He knew he was going for it, but I don't think he realistically thought he was going to score it, he did. Absolute cracker.
I think Piney summed it up on Twitter when he called it a Vinnie Lear goal.
Like, yeah.
Like the kind of goal that this player never scores, but when they do, it's an absolute screamer. I mean, that's all I have really to say about it. There's not much more other than fantastic technique and the shot. Probably got a little bit lucky. Not going to lie. He kind of mentioned that at the halftime interview. But hey, goal's a goal. 1-0 up.
Yep.
But yeah, then those key matches didn't started happening. I mean, the big one is the what turned out to be the winning goal. The one where the ball comes in on Mitch Duke and he pushes Payne out of the air.
Yep.
Which a lot of people think is absolutely fine by looking at it. I disagree, but I think it's a very, very clever foul from Mitch Duke.
Yes, I think that's right. I can see a lot of scenarios in which this is not called, and it wasn't called.
Yeah.
That's life. I do wonder how, given the softness of some of the things we see goals overturned on VAR, that this is not one they looked at more closely. And I mean, we've talked about it before, about how the angles we're looking at are not the same as the one as VAR, but the angle that shows this push the most clearly, they barely showed on television.
Yeah.
So whether or not that was also how VAR was dealing with it, because from one angle, you can barely see it.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, the television camera side, it is very obscured. But from the side on or the reverse angle, you absolutely see he pushes him a good meter away. There is a push.
Yeah.
It is very clear. Now, whether or not you think that push is enough to be a foul is a different story.
Yeah.
But to claim that there was no push, it was just good body position, is not true.
It's incorrect.
It is absolutely a push.
Yeah.
A slight push for sure, but it definitely means that Tim Payne does not win the ball. It is the factor for that.
And our friend Dale pointed out on Twitter that it's right at the start of Tim Payne's jump.
Yes.
So what it makes it look like is that Tim Payne has just misjudged it.
Yes.
In a normal situation where a player jumps up, gets pushed, there's a very clear change in trajectory.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people that are pointing out that there is no foul here just basing it on the fact that Tim Payne jumps, he continues in one fluid motion to another place.
Yeah.
But that's because he gets pushed right at the start of the jump.
Correct.
And that pushes him a good meter away. Like you say, you kind of, he's jumping straight up and down because that's what you do when you go for a ball. And he ends up a mile away because Mitch Duke doesn't move at all.
No.
And it's, yeah. I mean, it creates
all of the space Duke needs for his jump.
Exactly. There's a little bit of backwards movement from Duke, but not a meter, which is the space that he needs. Yep. He's not going to get his foot around that volley if Payne's right there. He's just going to kick Payne. It's going to be a foul. So, and I think the disappointing thing is that the VAR doesn't pick up on that, but then does at the other end.
Yeah, and I think this is the thing for me.
Yeah.
If you were to ask me, do I think this goal should have been overturned? I would say no.
No.
I'm comfortable with this one standing. I think there is a marginal foul there. I'm okay with not going back and overturning a goal. I think there is a push for sure. I think it's at the extremely low end of whether or not I think it should be called a foul.
Yeah.
But it's there. It's worth discussing. Then at the other end, we've got an offside that I think is even more marginal that has a goal ruled out. Now, I understand that obviously the way VAR rules on these two different things is very different.
Yeah.
But I think as a fan, this is why it's so frustrating. You've got two extremely marginal calls that both go against us and both have a huge impact on the game. If you had one each, you might feel, like, oh yeah, balanced out. But the reality is both go against us and for different reasons. And so as a fan, you go, we got robbed. And I think there were a lot of fans at the end of this game feeling like that. I'm sure some of the players did as well. Now, the reasons for that are clear. You know, the way they rule on an offside is down to, half a centimeter. It's absolute nonsense. But that's how that works. Whereas the push is much more subjective, and it's
that complete lack of subjectivity on the offside, which is the difference. And offside is very non-subjective.
Yeah.
You are either offside or you are not.
Yeah.
Whereas fouls, so much subjectivity. The whole game is someone interpreting a book that says what things are and what happens on the field. So I fully believe that VAR got the decision right. I have no problem with it as a decision. Yep. It's frustrating for the fan that this happens in the 94th minute where we think we've finally got something out of a game that we probably deserved and have managed to throw away somehow, to have a decision like that go against you. But also for it to happen so late, it took a minute for any sign of anything going on to happen. And it's because it's so far back in the play. I think it's the correct decision, and nothing I say around it should change that. But I think that this is not the kind of thing that we want in football. And it's going back into that, do we want VAR in the game conversation again? The fact that we're ruling out phenomenal goals that add a whole lot of excitement to a game for literally 2 centimeters, it's not football.
I understand that is how they are going to rule on offsides at the moment.
Totally.
But I disagree with it on a fundamental level because it ignores a range of things like the problems in terms of limitations of the technology. There are a lot of lengthy and quite detailed scientific reasons that have been detailed in the EPL about why there should be a margin for error here, down to things like the frame rates of the cameras, the sensitivity of the technology they're using. That, when you're talking in the matter of centimeters, I think in the EPL I saw that they basically think the margin of error should be something like 6 to 10 centimeters.
Yeah.
And there have been a lot of decisions in that league that have been less than that. And you're basically, it's the same way with speeding fines here, right? You have a plus or minus because the technology can't be held to that standard in a court of law, right? Now, obviously that's a very different scenario to a sports game. But the fact that we have a zero tolerance within this technology, whilst also knowing that there is margin for error within it, makes it very hard for me to go, these tight ones are a thing. But then on top of that, we've also specified down the offside rule in a way that I don't think was in the spirit of what the offside rule was about. We've got to this scenario where it was about taking an advantage, and that's not what we're looking at anymore. I think he has an advantage here because of the 1 centimeter offside he was? No.
Yeah.
I think the directions the players are moving and their positions on the field relative to each other are way more important than their position relative to the goal line.
Yeah. And this opens up a wider conversation that I don't really want to get into today in full depth, but it opens up a conversation about the fact that the law book was written in a time where this stuff didn't exist.
Correct.
The law book was never intended to be taken down to the absolute minuscule centimeter. It was intended, if he looks like he's offside to an AR on the side of the field, he is offside, which means that he's gaining enough of that advantage to cause someone to be able to see it with the naked eye in real time.
Yeah, and you used to have things like the daylight rule. I use the word rule very loosely there.
But interpretation.
Interpretation, right? Which allowed you to be offside by quite a large margin by what we're talking about in terms of today's terms.
Yeah.
And so my issue is that while I understand this will be called offside at the moment, I don't think that's what we should be intending the outcomes to be in these scenarios, and we need to find a way that that's better.
And the problem with the margin of error stuff is that where do you stop with the margin of error? Like if you add in 10 centimeters, then we're going to be complaining about the one that was 11 centimeters off. And so I think cricket does it in a good way where it accounts for that margin of error with the umpire's call system. Yep.
Absolutely,
and obviously they had to tweak that a little bit to make it so that you don't lose your view if it was missing the wickets or was hitting the wickets, but like that kind of thing.
But within the margin
works,
of error,
yeah, exactly. And it's a very clearly stated margin of error that is like everyone knows. Nobody's penalised if it doesn't go that way. I think I would like to see that on the field here. I think if it's within 20 centimetres, for example, then we stick with what the AR ruled. In this case, the AR didn't put his flag up at the end of the play. There was no offside called in real time. Therefore, we go with the on-field decision, which was goal. If the AR puts his flag up once the ball's in the back of the net, we check it.
You've got that on-field call to fall back on.
And then if it's within the 20 centimetres, we go, you know what? No, this is still offside. Even if it wasn't offside, even if it was in 20 centimetres the other way, I would say stick with the on-field call. That's how it is. That's the way that I would see a margin of error system working rather than just being like, is it within 10 centimeters? No, just don't call it.
So. It opens another can of worms though, right? If you're going to look at a replay and say, oh, he was onside by 10 centimeters, but we're going to stick with the call. Like, I agree with you. I think it's a system that makes sense, but you're going to have someone angsty about the fact that you've got clear evidence that the decision was wrong and therefore should be overturned.
But the thing is, you don't because you're within that margin of error. Yeah. And the margin of error goes both ways. It's not the margin of error doesn't only work if a player's going offside. So, yeah, I would just, and this is part of the thing with the VAR, I would like to see more things put back on the referees. We've seen it with yellow cards and red cards. We've seen that the VARs are getting less involved with that now than they did initially, where if they think that if a yellow card was shown, the directive is don't get involved unless it's a clear mistake. Don't get involved in the subjectivity like we spoke about before of it, which is why you don't see that many yellow cards getting upgraded to reds anymore. So we've seen that margin of error be put in other places in VAR, and this one just grates because it was in the 94th minute against our team, and that's why it grates so much.
Yep.
And the push on pain.
Exactly. And I think we're going to stop recording soon because there's not much more to talk about. But I think that the handball one, the handball rule and how VAR have dealt with that is an interesting one and the same thing, because it is a reasonably objective rule like offside. There is more subjectivity that we've added to the rule, but we have gone, you know what? Some of these handballs we started first calling under VAR, they weren't right. We need to fix that. And they've tried to fix it through the addition of more rules. Whether or not that's been the right solution, I won't get into. But they have tried to go, you know what? If this happens, it's not a handball. If this happens, that's not a handball. If this happens, that's not a handball. And tried to go, actually, we're gonna refine this down in such a way that things that we didn't intend to be handballs that suddenly we were calling handballs under VAR, we're fixing up. And I think you could look to do the same thing with offside. Now, I don't necessarily agree with the let's add 50 million exceptions way of fixing that, but they have shown some intent to try and fix these. I don't think we've seen that same intent come out around offsides. I mean, there are some changes to the offside rule coming in July or June this year that look to clarify some of it, but I don't think actually get anywhere near the root cause of the problem.
Yeah.
So we might be waiting another year for the following year's rules to see whether or not we actually see this changing much.
Yeah, it is what it is. I don't want to exclude the fact that the Phoenix conceded three goals that they shouldn't have. Like, that is a poor defensive performance in a game when your strikers are finally firing. Like, ignoring the fourth goal, the other three goals were just things that we shouldn't be giving up. I can't really remember them. It was a week ago now that game happened, and I haven't watched them since. I'm not watching a minute of that thing since. But the first goal I remember just being like a set piece or something that was bullshit. Like
we've been poor at defending set pieces all year, so it's not a surprise. But as you say, it is annoying that finally we start firing at the other end of the field and our defense starts to slip.
And we've never had this problem. I think this is the first game all season that we've conceded three. All the other games have been one or two. I think that's right.
But
yeah,
someone will point out we're wrong on Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm not convinced by that fact. But we've never been pumped defensively like this before. I've never felt like we've been torn apart. Certainly we haven't conceded four. So yeah, it was frustrating that we gave the Wanderers the opportunity to be back in this game.
Yeah.
The penalty that we got given, I think it's a clear penalty. I think the players running at pace and contact is made with nowhere near the ball. I'm fine with that penalty.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to argue much about that one. I mean, the contact's not heavy, but he's at pace.
Yeah.
It's enough to bring a player down, and it does.
Totally. And I was convinced that Himeb was going to butcher this. Like the way that he did the stutter run up, I was not... Yep. I was not on board with it.
I think years of being a Phoenix fan and watching us miss penalties had me worried for sure. Yeah. All of the signs were there that it was going to be a bad time, but he absolutely nails it.
Ended up being a nice penalty. So
nice. And great to see another fan group showing up for one of our players. And I mean, it's an old point we've made about marquee players and, you know, the fact they don't necessarily bring in fans. But here we're seeing a scenario where actually some kind of, I don't want to belittle the guys, but kind of tier two level players.
Sure.
These are not global superstars by any level, and they are drawing in a specific fan group, and that's fantastic to see. And I'm glad to see, although obviously the club are in a tough position in terms of trying to foster fan engagement, from everything I hear, they are really working hard to engage with those groups and keep them involved. And it's fantastic. That's what we should be doing. And hopefully we can find some ways to translate that back to Wellington when we can get back here.
Totally. I mean, it'll be hard because all of them are based
correct,
in
correct. But it's showing that they can engage with some groups that, you know, they weren't previously.
Totally.
I mean, there must be, you know, for example, you know, some Mexican fans of football in New Zealand.
Yeah.
How do we engage with that group, and why weren't we engaging with them already is definitely a thing we need to look into.
Yeah. I mean, there was some Brazilians around when Daniel was at the club and that kind of thing.
Exactly.
So, yeah. But it's particularly in a season where we have no yellow fever or no core home support. It's great that there are these pockets popping up of support for the team. And I think the boys would really appreciate it. I'm sure if you're a Phoenix player and you've got a bunch of Mexicans chanting for one of your players, that'll lift you even though you're not Uli de Villa. So great to see. And it was a shame that they didn't get the fairy tale finish that they had. Let's quickly go through the other games that were in the last round and then move on to next round. We had... Melbourne City topple MacArthur 3-0. I think the wheels are starting to fall off MacArthur, aren't they? Sydney FC got up 2-1 over the Newcastle Jets. Melbourne Victory continued a really shit season for them. 3-1 loss to Adelaide. The Mariners and the Glory played out till a draw. West United got up over Brisbane Roar 1-0. And then it was our game. And then the Wanderers continued because we're recording on a Saturday. They already played a Friday night game. And they beat Perth Glory 3-0. Perth are not very good this season. So that draw against the Mariners is surprising. Which brings us to tomorrow's game as we record. Probably today's game or last week's game as you're listening at home or at work on the bus, wherever you're listening to the podcast. We take on the Roar. The Roar are kind of just mid-tabling this season. They're in seventh place. They've only got one more win than us. They're sitting 4 points ahead of us. I think this game is fully winnable. I think if we can work on the defense and just keep the attack doing what they were doing, like that's the way you win this game.
I think reasonably, if we play like we did against the Wanderers, we win this game pretty comfortably. Yeah. There were some great goals in that Wanderers game, and you know that's why they were trying to talk it up as a classic, because the goals were good. I don't see Brisbane scoring that many good goals.
No.
I think we should, if we can keep scoring, even if it's not three or four goals, if we can put one or two in the net, that's probably enough to get this done.
Yeah, I think two is probably the safe level. I think it's unlikely that we'll pull off a 1-0 from what I've seen from our defense this season. Obviously, we've been conceding goals enough to lose games and draw games. So I think we'd be hoping for two goals here. Try and get Hamed back into the game, creating those chances for him. I don't know if he's going to start or not. There was talk on the forums about him potentially coming in for Wayne, but I don't think Wayne's done anything yet to say that he shouldn't be playing that first 60 minutes of the game. But I think we might see him injected a little bit earlier now that we've seen him fire a little bit.
Yeah, it's one of those ones. I think we'll probably continue picking horses for courses in some ways. I think both of them are strikers who have shown they could be good enough, but aren't actually at their full potential yet. So I think for Ufi, it's probably a matter of who does he think is going to have the most impact on the day. Mm. Both have 60 minutes in their legs at this point.
Yep.
It's a matter of whether you want that kind of physical presence that Hamed should be bringing, and he's got a bit of confidence now with a goal, you know, goal underway.
One and a half goals.
Exactly. whereas Waino is still going to be that young guy who's just going to run his guts out all game. And he certainly has some talent, but doesn't necessarily have that same wily experience that someone like Hamid's going to bring. So I think you'll see both of them play. As you say, it's just a matter of which one starts.
They both have benefits to being the sub. Yeah, I think you bring Wayne on the 60th or the 70th and he runs quick at them, and a tiring defense, especially if they've been marking up against Hamed and Uli all game, could be the way to break it down, especially if you're needing a goal. I think Hamed's probably the player that you want to bring on if you're leading the game so far, and just have them something so like those defense can't slack off. The war's got to worry about something. It'll be interesting. But not our call to make. Ufi's got the tough decision.
Exactly.
Fenton back in, perhaps. He obviously had a little niggle before the game. He was named in the starting lineup and then had to swap out. But
I think that'll come down to fitness. I would imagine if he's fit, he's back.
Who came in from? I've forgotten. I can look it up.
Kemi Devlin was the player who came in.
Right.
And we had to shuffle the back line to make it work.
Well, I guess if you can start Fenton, you'll do it then, so you don't have to shuffle around again. We ended up with McGarry at left back. That's what happened. I think 2-1 here. I think we've got enough, and this is the kind of game that we need to start winning, so I'm going to hope for it.
Yep, I think we'll win by two, so I'm going to call it 3-1, maybe 2-0.
Rest of the round is MacArthur taking on Western United. That'll be interesting to see how the two baby clubs go. Sydney FC taking on Victory. Nothing but a Sydney win there, right?
Victoria. Oh, you'd think so. But there's always going to be some point this season where Victory do get a win and look like they're turning around. I mean, it's going to happen.
That was us.
That's going to be a thing. Yeah. And a big blue might be the occasion they step up for.
Yeah.
But they just haven't shown anywhere, like being anywhere near their potential. We know the players on that side are good enough to put a team to the sword. Yeah. And I'm sure it's going to happen at some point. I just don't know when.
They also haven't changed anything. Like, no. That's been the thing. At least Ufi's changed things, tried different players when we've been struggling.
It's been a thing we were criticising Ufi for a while there. That he wasn't changing
things. Oh, right, of course.
That he was sticking doggedly to a losing tactic like we saw with Ernie towards the end there, that Ufi didn't look like he was going to change stuff, and he suddenly did, and you know, some things look different. Whether or not they've solved everything is a different discussion,
Do you think Bremner's doing the same, but just refusing to change because he believes in what he's doing?
Quite possibly, but at some point he's going to have to change. Yeah, like if it isn't working, you're going to have to change something, and you know, what game he's going to do that in and whether or not it works, who knows?
But there's a line and you shouldn't cross it, Dave.
But I do think that at some point this season, Victory are going to pump a team. There's going to be a 4 or 5 goal win, and that might spark a turnaround for them. But sadly for them, it's going to be too late to get them back in the playoffs.
You're watching too much Melbourne Heart.
Nah. They finished dead last.
Newcastle Jets taking on Adelaide United in the late Sunday night game. That's after our game. And then we've got a few midweek games coming up. Monday night, Melbourne City taking on the Mariners. We're playing on Wednesday as well. We should talk about that very briefly. We're playing the Victory, and that'll be the game where they pump someone 4-0.
This was going to be my point. If it's not this weekend against Sydney,
it's midweek.
It's probably going to be us.
Yeah.
We are that team that love playing a striker and a team back into form.
They've already done it once. They've already beaten us once this season. So one of their two victories was against us. And then the last game of the round, if my phone will take me back there, is Perth Glory taking on Sydney FC at 11:20 p.m. on Wednesday. Don't watch it.
Stay up
for
that.
Just go to bed, everybody. Don't do it. And that is the A-League for the round. We'll move on to the Handy Premiership for the final time. Final time previewing a game.
Yep.
We were down at David Farrington last week for the semi-final, which Team Wellington won 4-1, thanks to a Hamish Watson hat-trick and Sam Mason-Smith getting on the score sheet as well. Which was a great day out. I think it was a phenomenal performance from Team Wellington after the little bit of a scare the previous week against Hamilton to be able to turn it around and put them to the sword. With those few players coming back into the team, that made a big difference. Mario made a huge difference. I think T at the back, Taylor Shrivers was also key. But apart from that one goal to Derek Teku, it was all Team Wellington, and that's what you wanted to see.
Absolutely, and Watto was just
phenomenal.
Sublime.
Yeah, absolutely phenomenal.
I just for posterity, I did enjoy that his one bad touch of the day was right in front of you.
Dale tried to bait me into saying something and I was like, nah.
It was funny because Watto criticized his own touch.
Oh,
which
yeah,
made
for sure.
It funnier.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the goal actually came from a Watto shit touch where he gave the ball away and straight away went down the other field, and he was annoyed at himself immensely. And I think if anybody in the crowd had got involved in that, it would have been fair play to our friend Newsy, though. He was like, hit up Watto, and Watto seemed to react well and scored another goal. So there we go. It brings us to a grand final against Auckland City. Auckland City getting up 2-1 over Eastern Suburbs. An own goal ended up being the difference there. But that fills me with a little bit of hopefulness about the final, because obviously Team Wellington coming up on a better victory against a better team than Eastern Suburbs. So Auckland having a few weeks, well, they already had the league wrapped up, and then the extra week between the end of the league and the semifinals might have put a little bit of an evener back on it. So I think if there's any chances any of Team Wellington knocking them off the game, this is it.
Yep, and I think you're right. I think it's going to be an entertaining game either way. I mean, obviously, Auckland are very good at winning these sort of crunch games.
That's what they do.
Often grind out just enough. You know, they're not a team to go out there and win a final by 6 goals, whereas Team Wellington, they don't change the way they play for finals football particularly. They go out there and they play their game and they hope it works, whereas Auckland are very good at grinding out a result. So it'll be interesting to see if Team Wellington can get up early, that might well change the complexion of it. Whereas I think if you see an Auckland City goal early on, it'll be a hold on for dear life, and it may suck some of the life out of the game a little, but obviously Team Wellington will push and try and get back in it. So it's going to be entertaining either way.
Yeah, Watto's form from a Team Wellington perspective fills me with confidence, because I think that he can just get something out of nothing. He can just get the ball at his feet 30 yards out and absolutely pummel it and get them back in the game. So to be making sure that he's able to get involved, making sure there's enough ball moving forward, the midfielder doing their job to move that forward. I think Bevan's form will be key. Again, as it always is against Auckland, against any team really for Team Wellington. But if Auckland can manage to mark him out of the game and prevent him getting ball moving it forward, I think it'll be much easier for them to sail to victory, rather than if he's managing to pull the strings in the middle, get Sam and Watto up front involved, and we could see it go the other way. So really, it's anybody's game. It really is. And it'll be the final ever game in the Handy Prem. So if you're in Auckland, get out there, support Team Wellington. head down. I think fans are congregating for both teams at the Merchant at our Westfield. If you want to go and have a pre-drink before the game. I'm not heading up. I got work down here, but you've got things down here, I guess, as well, Dave.
Yeah,
so
sadly.
Shame. I'm not going to watch it. I'm going to be busy, so that's going to be a shame. But I think it's on Sky Sport, and I think if you're overseas, it's on the New Zealand Football Facebook page as well. So,
that's fantastic.
Yeah, great. And that's probably the pod for this week. A nice round 25 minutes.
Perfect.
Amazing what you can do with no Cam and Frosty. Just really condense it down.
I mean, you don't want me to talk more about VAR?
I mean, no, not really. I didn't even want to talk about it at all, but you have to.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody.
Yeah, we won't record until the victories game is done, and then we'll record about both games. Hopefully 6 points. What odds do you reckon it is for 6 points from those 2 games, Dave? What percentage chance?
50.
Oh, I was going to go 42. Anyway, thank you for listening, and we'll be back very soon. Bye.
Bye.